KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Klamath tribes, which are comprised of the Klamath, Modoc, and Yahooskin people, have sent help down to Southern California to fight the massive wildfires. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
The Klamath tribe sent a Type 3 fire engine and crew down to tackle the Eaton fire, which was nearing 14,000 acres Thursday night. The incident command post is at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. William Ray Jr. is chairman for the Klamath tribes. He says the crew will be on the fire line no later than Friday morning.
You know, we had a lot of help in Oregon, in our backyard, from Southern California crews, and we're just returning the favor in their time of need and want to just show that the tribes are supportive with our crews that we have available with all Indian spirit of giving.
Ray says the Klamath tribes and U.S. Forest Service will jointly be sending a second engine and crew down before the weekend. Both deployments are equipped for 14 days. More fires are expected across Southern California due to ongoing dry weather and powerful Santa Ana winds through early next week. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
On Thursday, Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin said in a social media post that a team of Navajo wildland firefighters has been deployed to Southern California to help battle the fires. He says the Navajo Scouts, a team of 23 members, including a female firefighter, are highly trained to fight fires like these. Members of the team are from various communities across the Navajo Nation. In Alaska, a Kodiak Island resident has been honored with a national award for environmental leadership. One of eight awardees, Natasha Hayden, was recognized for her work advocating for Alaska Native fishing rights. KMXT's Davis Hovey has more.
When the Center for Rural Affairs in Nebraska contacted Natasha Hayden to tell her she'd won a national award, she says she almost thought it was a scam.
Also in the you know, today's climate of where people are reaching out to you to try to get you to send them money and send you your personal information, there is quite a bit of skepticism about it. It's like, oh, somebody's cold calling me basically to say you've won this award.
But the award was real. It acknowledges a range of advocacy work Hayden has been doing for Alaska Native people on Kodiak Island, including her tribe of the Native Village of Afognak, for years. Over those last 10 years as a tribal council member, Hayden has focused on fisheries advocacy and stewardship of marine mammals around Kodiak Island. Hayden is also part of the Kodiak Island Tribal Coalition, which represents the Kodiak Archipelago's 10 tribes. She says various villages in the region have lost 50 to 100% of their commercial fishing permits and a larger outmigration from those communities over the course of a few decades.
Seeing this severe negative impact and working towards restoring access to those fisheries that are right outside of our back door has been primary, and it's intertwined with everything.
Hayden says she is building on the resource management work that was done by generations preceding her, which she says future generations will take up as well.
And I take a huge amount of comfort from the belief that the Aleutic people have been here for thousands of years and that we're still going to be here in 1,000 years.
Hayden will receive $25,000 as part of her 2024 Environmental Leader Award. Other awardees include a Meskwaki artist and farmer from Iowa, an indigenous food sovereignty advocate in Louisiana, and a Diné environmental scientist in Arizona. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
I was pleased when I spoke with the chief about these recommendations. Some of them are things that were already in progress.
The city of Anchorage releases a third-party review of the police department's use of force policies. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 10th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Juneau Assembly rezones public land to increase housing availability.
These resolutions today are actionable steps that will help address the housing shortage in Juneau and allow the community to grow.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers new and transfer students a wide range of scholarships, grants, and other financial assistance. Apply for admission to be considered automatically for most scholarships, and complete your financial aid application by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
No bids were received in the second congressionally managed oil and gas lease sale in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, the Department of Interior announced on Wednesday. The Alaska Beacon reports that had any been received, bids were scheduled to be opened on Friday by the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. That Interior agency was charged with managing the refuge leasing program created through a 2017 tax bill passed by a Republican-controlled Congress and signed by President Donald Trump in his first term. The absence of bids this time, after very few bids were received in the first lease sale held 4 years ago, backs up Biden administration officials' beliefs that drilling in the refuge is bad policy, said a statement released by the Interior Department. This week's lease sale follows one held on January 6, 2021, that drew little bidding and none from large oil companies. Most bids in that sale were from the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority and Alaska State Development Agency. An ADA official said on Wednesday that the agency and the Biden administration had reached an agreement to ensure that the leases acquired in that first lease sale will not be resold to other parties. Supporters of oil development in the refuge blamed the Biden administration for the lack of bids this time, saying it put too many restrictions on oil development in the refuge, sometimes referred to as ANWR. A consultant hired by Anchorage's municipal attorney has nearly a dozen recommendations to improve police de-escalation and use of force policies after officers shot and killed a local teenager last year. The city just released the consultant's report to the public on Thursday. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
In August, 16-year-old Easter Liafa was shot and killed by Anchorage police after they responded to a domestic disturbance at her home. Liafa had reportedly threatened one of her sisters with a knife, and she had the knife on her when officers killed her. State prosecutors later deemed the shooting was legally justified. The killing sparked outrage in Anchorage and concerns over how the police department handles use of deadly force. Shortly after Liafa's death, Mayor Suzanne LaFrance announced a series of reforms, including a third-party review of the shooting. That review was completed in November by Christopher Darcy, a former Las Vegas police officer and now consultant on law enforcement. Darcy says he can't speak to the specifics of his report for legal reasons, but broadly, he says he's found that police departments across the country often tailor how they respond to critical incidents when they arrive on the scene, and he thinks they should be more proactive.
We need to start at the very moment that the call is received. So the tactics and the training and the subsequent policies that reinforce that and the accountability aspect is really all focused on the actions that are starting before we arrive.
Anchorage's municipal attorney declined to release Darcy's full report, citing legal concerns, but requested he compile a separate public report citing his recommendations for training and policy changes. In the report, Darcy listed 11 recommendations, ranging from better management of high-risk responses and incorporating less lethal options into use of force training, to improving interactions with both diverse communities and witnesses of police shootings. Municipal Attorney Eva Gardner says in conversations she's had with the police department, the recommendations seem doable.
I was pleased when I spoke with the chief about these recommendations. When I've spoken with him, some of them are things that were already in progress.
As part of the reforms announced by LaFrance, Gardner says the city of Anchorage has also put out a bid for a third-party group to take a holistic look at APD.
But that is where the more comprehensive look, where we will bring in, you know, fresh eyes to look at all aspects of APD training, supervision, policy that relate to de-escalation, use of force, and cultural awareness.
The deadline for contractors to submit bids to the city is February 13th. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
As Juneau residents continue to grapple with a housing crunch, the city is looking at new and creative ways to get more homes built. In its latest attempt, Monday night, the Juneau Assembly approved a series of public land rezones from Douglas Island to Auk Bay to increase the housing density allowed in those areas. KTOO's Clarice Larson has more.
Cars zoom past the wooded land that surrounds Grant Creek on North Douglas Highway on Tuesday morning. It's located just a few minutes beyond the bridge from downtown Juneau. The area is quiet. Nothing but a few single-family homes are nearby, and only a handful of people walk past it on the shoulder of the highway. But soon, that could all change. On Monday, the Juneau Assembly approved rezoning more than 200 acres of city-owned property to increase the housing density in those areas. It includes land north and south of Grant Creek and west of the Bonnie Bray and Blacktail subdivisions on North Douglas. And they also approved rezoning some land in the Auk Bay area.
These resolutions today are actionable steps that will help address the housing shortage in Juneau and allow the community to grow into the cultural and economic hub that's needed to create lifelong residents in Juneau.
That's Michael Riederer, a North Douglas resident who lives adjacent to one of the rezoned lots. He testified in favor of all the rezonings approved by the Assembly at the Monday night meeting.
As a member of a longtime North Douglas family, I have no concerns about the possible additional traffic burden and look forward to seeing new families in the neighborhood.
Rezoning the land to have a higher density means more units can be built there than what was authorized before, so more people can live there. It's just one way the Assembly and city are trying to incentivize developers to build more housing in the borough. That's especially needed as a U.S. Coast Guard icebreaker is slated to be homeported in Juneau, bringing more residents to town in the coming years, and as annual glacier flooding of the Mendenhall River threatens homes in the Mendenhall Valley. Here's Dan Blydorn, the city's land and resource manager, at a previous meeting on the topic.
The market is stuck, and you know, part of this like multiple zone change scenario is to try to get multiple types of city property ready for development or disposal at a future time when plans can be worked on.
Not everyone is on board with the idea. Auk Bay resident Heather Marlowe says she was concerned about landslides and whether people in the rezoned lots could get insurance for their homes if they happened.
As many of you are aware, the area in Southeast Alaska has seen landslides yearly for several years. If this area is rezoned and developed, are we setting up an area that's not considered for landslide coverage?
During previous meetings on the topic, other residents expressed concerns about the increased traffic more housing could bring to the North Douglas area and the lack of access it has to emergency services. North Douglas resident Gary Gillette testified at a Planning Commission meeting in October.
I understand the need to increase housing, but if we do it and put people in harm's way, that's not a service to the community.
He asked the rezones on North Douglas be stalled until a second crossing from Douglas Island to Juneau is built, though that plan is likely years away from even breaking ground. Though the Assembly approved the rezones, it doesn't necessarily guarantee developers will want or will be able to afford to build there. High interest rates and the cost of materials continue to be barriers for many developers from breaking ground on new projects. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, facing a multi-million dollar budget deficit, the Kodiak School District considers closing a school.
I don't want Maine to close. My little sister will be in third grade next year, and I want her to be able to go to Maine.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your coverage and saving options, and enroll in a plan at healthcare.gov. The help is free, unbiased, and confidential. Language interpretation is available. Call 211 to connect to free local navigator assistance. For coverage starting January 1st, you must enroll by December 15th. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
Kodiak is considering closing an elementary school as it faces an $8 million budget deficit. It's the latest district grappling with possible school closures over a shortfall of state education funding. And as KMXT's Brian Venois reports, the community is making its voice heard in the 3 weeks allotted for public comment.
Kodiak Island Borough School District's central office was packed for Tuesday evening's school board work session, so much so that they opened a second room for more people to watch live or line up for public comment. Both rooms were remarkably tense. Dozens of people spoke in front of the Board of Education, largely in favor of taking Main Elementary, just outside downtown, off the chopping block, including some kids.
My name is Iris, and I'm in fifth grade at Main. I have gone to Maine since kindergarten, and even though I'll be going to middle school next year, I don't want Maine to close. My little sister will be in third grade next year, and I want her to be able to go to Maine.
Maine was spared a closure recommendation, at least for now. Instead, the district superintendent, Cindy Micka, listed closing North Star Elementary just north of town as option A. Cutting Peterson Elementary near the Coast Guard's base Kodiak was listed as option B. She says there's two reasons why she chose those two for potential closures as opposed to Maine.
One was the density study of students. The majority of our students live closer to this downtown area. And the second one was walkability for families.
She says keeping Maine open means more people will have an easier time to engage in school activities like clubs or conferences. But it still doesn't mean the school is safe.
It was a tough decision to make. And now the board has the tough decision on their shoulders. They ultimately are the decision makers. I don't have a vote. I just make the recommendations.
The board also has option C, making their own plan. Some people questioned whether closing a school had to be an option. Mark Anthony Biscocho, a Filipino community leader, pointed out that there are several groups and people who are quick to help come up with solutions, especially in a crisis.
I know that as Kodiak, we can come up with a better solution. And closing a school down, I don't think it's going to be a best solution for us. Now, if the school board needs help, reach out to us.
District officials are hoping for that, too. There's two meetings on the issue scheduled for next week and a survey opening to solicit feedback. Board member Duncan Fields says he's open to ideas, but hasn't seen one that could save as much as closing a school would.
If you can do that, I won't support closing a school. But from where I sit, looking at the budget, I don't see an alternative in this budget cycle to closing a school.
The problem comes down to math. The school district has faced a shrinking student count and rising salary and maintenance costs despite flat funding from the state's education funding formula, or the base student allocation. That makes up more than half of its projected revenue. The state government has only passed one-time funding boosts since 2017, except for a small increase for the Alaska Reads Act. The Alaska legislature passed a bill last year that would have permanently increased the amount the Kodiak district gets by about $3.5 million, but that was vetoed by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Other districts, including in Anchorage, are also considering school closures to deal with a financial shortfall. Micka says the increases wouldn't be enough to get the district out of the red, though. About half of any increases from the state are promised to staff raises. The district is facing an $8 million deficit.
Unless we get a huge increase in our BSA, we're not going to stabilize. We're going to find cuts again next year. That's a pie-in-the-sky dream that I don't think is reality at this point. And so it's not anything that I've even looked at.
Closing a school could save up to $2.8 million. Another $1.8 million reduction could come from programmatic cuts that were suggested but not taken last year. The district has some savings it could use, but it's not enough to eat the rest of the cost and still be prepared for an emergency. There aren't many other ways for the district to get more money. The borough could increase how much it gives the school. Local contribution is expected to make up about a third of its budget for the next fiscal year. Micka says she and the board know that these decisions aren't in students' best interest, but there aren't other options.
And it's not anything that I want to see us doing in the district. I mean, I'm very It's not what's best for students, but if it comes down to what we have to do to save our schools, our administrative team stands ready to make the recommendations we have to. Everyone has a face. Yeah, everyone has a face.
No layoffs are planned if the board decides to cut a school, but some employees may be offered different contracts from their current jobs. The district is working to open a survey online for public comment about the closure proposal. Mika says the best way to send feedback and ideas is to reach out to her directly or to come to one of the upcoming meetings. The board is expected to make an action decision at its meeting on January 20. In the district central office, I'm Brian Venois.
Sitka is in the unusual position of having a lot of money to spend on upkeep of local school buildings if the district can afford to keep them all open next year. A possible school closure was top of mind when the Sitka School Board met to prioritize its maintenance list for the year. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has the story.
Sitka voters in 2023 approved a 1% seasonal sales tax to repair and maintain the community school buildings, all of which are owned by the city. The growth in cruise tourism has generated a substantial amount of cash for this work, an estimated $2 million a year, and the Sitka School Board met on January 8th to review the list of proposed projects. But there was an elephant in the room, and it would not stay quiet. Prior to reviewing the maintenance list, the board had a demonstration from District Business Manager Catherine Hollis Buchanan of the online tool called Balancing Act that allows the public to experiment with a variety of budget scenarios for the district. The tool has a line for school closures.
School closures. I put that on there because I've heard it thrown around. I'm saying it would significantly and negatively affect our state revenue. Well, keeping a number of schools open gives us more revenue from the state than putting all those students into a smaller number of buildings. So just keep that in mind.
Superintendent Deidre Jensen explained that the state scheme for funding school districts, called the Foundation Formula, involved a complicated relationship between student population and buildings that could make closing a school financially unfeasible. And there was this.
The other thing to consider is that once you close a school, you have to keep it closed for 7 years before you can open it back up. I would love this to be the case that the Coast Guard cutter comes in and we have an influx of families. We have an influx of families because we now the hospital is now there and we have more employees, so we have more. And now all of a sudden we've closed a school and now we are at capacity. We can't open a school back up. So now you're just crammed into a building and you can't, you know. So there's another element of that that we have to kind of consider as well.
When the board turned its attention to the list of proposed maintenance projects, about 40 of them across all district buildings, some members were concerned about spending money on buildings that may not be in service. Again, there is currently no plan to close a school in Sitka, but it remains a possibility and one that Superintendent Jensen said would force a rethinking of the maintenance list.
And if we ended up closing a school, that's going to have to be a whole other conversation with the city. I think we're going to be back to the drawing board.
City staff were on hand for the discussion of the maintenance priorities. Acting Public Works Director Amy Ainsley told the board that the list did not account for a possible school closure.
I do agree that that would be a different conversation, both because the costs associated with closing a school and probably making modifications or improvements to the other school that's absorbing those students, there are going to be costs associated with that.
Ainsley added that the city, should a school close, would have to enter a planning process for the future use of the building. But for now, her department was looking at maintaining school buildings for their current use. Superintendent Jensen added that there was a health and safety priority in the proposed maintenance list that might change significantly if the buildings were not used for schools. The board approved the maintenance list unanimously. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
IBEW's path to success includes excellent training, good wages, benefits, and a comfortable retirement. Join the IBEW and build a bright future. Call 907-575-7285 to find out more. This message sponsored by IBEW Local 1547.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture will buy up to $50 million worth of Alaska pollock, according to a press release Wednesday from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. The estimated 15 million pounds of pollock will go towards supplying food banks and other food aid programs around the country. The recent buy is just the latest influx of cash to Alaska seafood industry from the federal government. The USDA spent about $200 million purchasing seafood like salmon and pollock last year, according to ASME officials. It also purchased $200 million worth in 2023. Alaska pollock is the country's largest fishery by volume, but it was among several species that saw prices plummet in 2023. An October report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration also pointed to massive losses for the seafood industry as a whole that year. That's partly because harvest from Alaska's waters has struggled to compete on an international stage. The USDA buy also comes after another bad year for pollock fishermen in the Gulf of Alaska. The fishery's bee season came to a close months early because of an unprecedented amount of Chinook caught as bycatch or incidental harvest. The A season for the pollock fisheries in both the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska start this month. The Alaska Wildlife Conservation Center raised more than $30,000 in just 2 days to rebuild an animal shelter after it was destroyed by high winds on Monday. No animals were harmed. The Sitka black-tailed deer shelter was demolished by a windstorm that swept through much of south-central Alaska on Monday. Wind gusts in the Portage area peaked at 82 miles an hour, according to the National Weather Service. The center launched a fundraiser on Wednesday to raise $30,000 to rebuild the shelter, and they exceeded their goal in about 36 hours. Executive Director Sarah Howard says she's blown away by the support.
Just super gracious for everyone's support in the help that we're now going to be able to immediately start building on Monday.
Nearly $32,000 had been raised as of Friday afternoon. Photos posted by the facility on Wednesday show the shelter's roof completely detached and its walls scattered across the enclosure. The shelter is used during harsh weather, feeding, and as a recovery area for deer after medical procedures. There are 5 deer at the center, and they're known as the friendliest animals at the facility. Howard says the Sitka deer have been on alert since the windstorm and have been hanging out in the back of the enclosure.
There's some of the friendliest animals we have on the property, but they're very aware of their surroundings. And so I'm sure when this building started to creak and crack, that probably freaked them out quite a bit.
There's an estimated 200,000 of the species in Alaska, concentrated in southeast. It's the most hunted big game species in the region, according to Fish and Game. This week, Russian Orthodox communities across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta celebrate Slavic, the celebration of the birth of Christ according to the Julian calendar. The holiday is well known in the region for its tradition of starring. KYUK's Samantha Watson followed Bethel's star.
For the peace from above and for the salvation of our souls, let us pray to the Lord.
There's a church at the edge of the tundra on the north side of Bethel. And inside, there is a wooden star. With large points of red and gold, it waits beneath a Christmas tree at the evening nativity service. Many such stars rest inside Russian Orthodox churches across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. They are often ornately painted or adorned with tinsel and fixed to a rod, allowing them to be spun like a miniature carousel with the force of a hand. And they're an integral part of the coming celebrations. At St. Sophia's in Bethel, this service on January 6th marks the beginning of Slavic, a January anniversary of the birth of Jesus Christ according to the Julian calendar. The choir presses together in the balcony above the wooden room, candlelit altars below them. They shower hymns in three languages, English, Gyoktun, Slavonic, down into a standing congregation. It is a 2-hour service of communion and Christmas blessings, and is nearly all sung. A priest swings a thurible of incense. It jingles like sleigh bells. Tomorrow, the starring procession will begin. The red and gold star of Saint Sophia will leave the church and travel throughout Bethel, accompanied by the church community. It is a symbol of the Eastern Star, the one the kings of the East followed in the sky to the birthplace of Christ. At each home, the choir will sing while the star whirls on its axis. After, food and gifts will be shared. The same will happen in Russian Orthodox communities throughout the region. Parishioners of St. Sophia bring armfuls of home-cooked food into the YK elders' home. There, gathered around the home's Christmas tree, a boy holds the decorated star. It spins and spins from a belt at his hip, with bells on each point and an image of Jesus at its center. The choir again spills into song. When the singing is through, a holiday frenzy of candy, socks, and cookware will erupt, with treats given out by the handful to any and all in attendance by members of St. Sophia Church. This week, the Russian Orthodox community will continue Slavic festivities, extending the season of Christmas in the YK Delta by following the spinning star from door to door. In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Wesley Early and Ava White in Anchorage, Clarice Larson in Juneau, Brian Venois in Kodiak, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Samantha Watson in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Sustaining membership offers public media greater financial stability month to month, so consider making a sustaining gift to this station. Thank you. Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
I've been asking some people if they remember the girl they forgot, the brown eyes they caught. Red dress, had you seen her? I think she
to find her. I'd like to remind her the times we had there, more than just good friends. Guess she is missing, it's true. I've been asking around, and what I have found, she moved on farther this time. I've been checking it out, there ain't no doubt, that woman used to be mine. She is a missing person, she's hiding away, you see. She is a missing person, she's so much lighter. She's got a new rider, she's so much tighter. Missing person, she's hiding away from me. She up and she left, now she's gone. She didn't even give me a clue. Didn't write me no notes, send me no letters. Where are you? Missing person, where are you?
All full of good intent. round and round, carousel has got you under its spell, moving so fast, but going nowhere. Up and down Ferris wheel, tell me how does it feel to be so thank you.
surrounding me. There's so much going on. It gets hard to breathe when all my faith has gone. You bring it back to me. You make it real for me. When I'm not sure of my priorities, when I've lost sight of where I'm meant to be, like holy water washing over me, you make it real for me. Teach my heart to speak. You're making real for me. Which way to turn? You always give me somewhere I can run. You're making real for me.
You know what spreads faster than any virus? It's fear. Now when it comes to fear, you can either forget everything and run. I said, or you can face everything and rise.
I believe.
And let me tell you what I believe.
I believe that.
I believe we're gonna face everything.
I believe
and rise.
That we will win.
It's not how you fall, it's how you get back up. And what don't kill us make us stronger, boy. Bet that up, take a swing at us. You better hit hard, cause when we swing back, it's like, oh God. From the bottom, I'm that uncut, real raw. When things get tough, that's when we show up. That's when we show out. That's when we show y'all. It's time to knuckle up and fight hard. Now let's all buckle up and fight hard.
Bottom line, no matter what, face everything and rise.
This is Dmitry Filimonov, President and CEO of the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association.
Over the last 5 years, APIA's Tribal Child Support Program has collected and distributed nearly $1.5 million, with 100% of those funds going to parents raising our next generation. We offer flexible and holistic case management to families. All residents of the Regional 10 communities are eligible for this alternative to state child support. To apply, please go to apiai.org or call 1-800-478-2742.
Remember, if you are in Anchorage, please come visit the Unangamulla, home of the Aleuts. Unangamulla.